Welcome to Media Nouveau, a podcast series exploring new media, old media, and the murky area in between.
We're students in David Morgan's New Media Writing class at Emory University.
Throughout the semester, we will discuss and question different facets of the ever-changing media landscape,
examining the ways in which we interact with and shape media. Each episode will explore a publication,
so that the series as a whole will articulate our own definition of these genres.
Hello, and welcome to this week's episode of Media Nouveau. I'm your producer, Mackenzie Liebergen.
And I am the assistant producer, Cindy Fain, and we will be talking about My Favorite Murder,
the true crime comedy podcast that's sweeping the internet. Today we're going to be investigating how My Favorite Murder helped bring true crime from a guilty pleasure of women everywhere to a public pastime. So stay tuned. So the deal with My Favorite Murder is that it's this comedy true crime podcast hosted by these two awesome women, Karen Kilgariff and Georgia Hardstark. So Georgia is a cooking channel personality. Karen is a stand-up comedian. What did you think of it, Cindy? Because you listened to your first ever My Favorite Murder episode pretty recently.
Yeah, so I listened to an episode of My Favorite Murder yesterday. It was about hometown murder stories. And before I listened to it, I thought it was going to be like brutal, like super gruesome. And it will be talking about people blasting into, I don't know, like scattered into pieces or something. And just what I've seen in anime stories. But after I listened to it, I realized it was actually pretty chill. Like it was fun. And they were laughing and they were talking about really some of the hometown cultural issues. So it was actually pretty nice. It was really different from what I perceived it would be.
Right. Hardstark herself says in an interview to Rolling Stone magazine that the podcast title means it's not favorite, like I love this murder. It's the one I really want to talk to you about because it's so insane. So that's the thing about this podcast, is it's really informal. It's, you know, the first third of it generally in a main episode is just Karen and Georgia talking about their personal lives and struggles. It's very organic. It's not really edited at all. And it basically is just two women talking about true crime, which makes it really, really different from any of the media we've seen around this genre in the past, don't you think?
Exactly. So I don't think that women talked about crime a lot in podcasts. And it was, I guess, violence and crimes were previously thought as like of man's realm. And women are not so associated with violence. More importantly, women are not associated with the violence that can be interpreted in a woman, like in female perspective.
Right. Yeah, totally. And before podcasts even were a thing, true crime was pretty much limited to TV shows and books, which are not public things, you know? Like, it's not like you go to a murder party and everybody talks about it around the dinner table. Like, no, it's very much like a secret pleasure. And so women really like true crime. Did you know that?
I actually don't know, but I'm somehow attracted to crime. Like, I do watch a lot of, like, TV series about crimes, and I thought it was pretty interesting. I like detective stories. Like, I'm a super brutal person.
Yeah, and that's not uncommon. According to a article in Social Psychological and Personality Science Journal in 2010, 70% of the Amazon true crime book reviews were by women.
Really?
Yeah. And reviews in the paperback section, for comparison, were evenly split between men and women. So true crime very much is a women's genre.
That's pretty new to me, actually. I didn't know that.
Why do you think that is?
I guess because it's just like the social stereotype about women and men. So I don't actually know that there are a lot of women who actually write crime stories and write things about crimes.
Right. It's definitely not considered ladylike to talk about morbid things like that. There are a couple theories as to why women like this. A few of them are like, it's because women are drawn to a sort of sense of what if, because so many victims of these violent crimes are women.
Exactly.
One of my favorite theories came from best-selling crime novelist Mel McGrath, linked to in the sources. Mm-hmm. Crime fiction and drama lets us feel the outrage we aren't encouraged to express in real life about the violence meted out to us by men and the sense of satisfaction and relief when the mostly male perpetrators get their comeuppance.
Oh. Exactly. And I think that podcasts elevated that effect because we can actually hear the people telling about these stories. They're telling with tones, with emotions. Sometimes they're angry, sometimes they're sad about it. And we're sort of brainwashed by that tone. So we will be more sympathized and attracted to the story more than we can be by reading a book or, just by reading a story.
I definitely think that's true. And another huge aspect of My Favorite Murder that really sets it apart from books and TV shows and movies, which were kind of the definition of true crime before this came about, is the Facebook group. So I don't know if you know this, but the My Favorite Murder Facebook group is a closed group full of people who call themselves murderinos, aka they love true crime. It's mostly women. Guess how many members are in this group?
Maybe thousands?
150,000 members.
Wow, that's a lot.
Yeah, it's a lot of people. And all of these people are equally interested and invested in these stories that Hardstark and Kilgariff talk about. They're basically the third, speakers of the podcast. Like, they contribute their stories to the group. They talk about the stories. It really puts a new spin on the idea of what content in true crime means.
Wait, I actually have a question. So in this group, they will talk about crimes with each other, or they will be like just daily interactions?
It's mostly crimes, but it also can be daily interactions. Like if someone, sees a body bag, being put into an ambulance on the way to work, they'll talk about that in the group. Or if somebody is really like, hey, this thing bothered me about the JonBenet Ramsey case, then they'll talk about it with the group.
So how do you think this group will function in a social context? Like, is it like a safe space for girls, women to talk about crimes?
I absolutely think it's a safe space for women to talk about crimes. Hardstark herself says it's a community of shit that you're not supposed to talk about in polite society, which everyone fucking thinks about constantly.
Exactly.
According to the Rolling Stone article. And I feel like this Facebook group is an incredibly pertinent example of post-structuralist theory, in that the audience is participant in the creation of meaning. What do you think?
I think exactly, because in the podcast, basically, they're talking about audiences' stories, not their stories, and audiences give comments to their stories, and they will sometimes adjust to what the audience says. So it's context that really pretty much respect the audiences, and audiences are a part of this culture, of forming the meaning of this podcast.
Right. This podcast could very easily be interpreted as kind of like, oh, why are these two women being so blasé about murder? But the audience that is so, finds themselves in the victims and, sees themselves as sympathetic to the victims of these crimes and takes these crimes as sort of a how to stay alive manual, really creates a whole world of meaning around something that could easily just have been narrative.
So do you think that My Favorite Murder raised people's awareness of crime, like of preventing themselves from being a victim?
I think true crime in general does that, and I think My Favorite Murder especially does that because of the participatory culture of it and the Facebook group. So these murderinos are talking to each other. They're having meetups in their cities where they talk about true crime and how to stay safe and how to, try not to be a victim. Georgia and Karen dispense advice like stay sexy, don't get murdered, and fuck politeness, which are very anti to what women's roles in societies in society usually functions. And the fact that women are able to bond around these phrases and these life advice and these, you know, tips on how to usurp their typical gender role of the victim is incredible.
So you think that My Favorite Murder not only raised people's awareness of being safe and how to stay safe, but it also kind of like shattered the gender stereotype of women being docile, submissive, and polite?
I absolutely think that's the case. And a big part of that is it got popular because women saw this advice and this viewpoint as so refreshing and important that they shared it with everyone they knew. You know, they shared it everywhere with every woman who they thought could benefit from it, which makes it really spreadable.
Wait, you're talking about the idea of spreadability, but actually podcasts is pretty related to the idea of stickiness because it's broadcasting. It's like two hosts broadcasting towards over 150,000 audience. So how is that spreadable?
Yes and no. First of all, podcasts aren't like live TV in which numbers are racked up based on who views it live, which is, you know, pretty different from what we think of as stickiness in regular culture. Secondly, the podcast is accessible on numerous different podcast platforms. So iTunes, Podbean, Pocket Cast, just the website of Stitcher.com, which is what's linked to in our sources, and that's the company that, you know, owns technically My Favorite Murder, which makes it really different from what we know as traditional broadcasting in that it actually functions as something that people can save and share and listen to later and isn't, you know, just a money-making machine when you go there one time for 30 minutes.
You mean the spreadability lies in its flexibility and the media convergence surrounded by it?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. I mean, by itself, it is just two women talking for a while. But when you combine it with the internet and social media platforms and, you know, embedding links into articles, you get something that is highly spreadable and can really take shape across the internet rather than being in one kind of very strict location. And it's free, which is definitely different from what we think of as sticky media. Like, after all, television costs crazy amounts of money for a cable package. Yeah, so that's definitely the case.
So we've analyzed the assumptions My Favorite Murder challenges along with its influence over society, particularly women in the social media context. And also we've discussed its radical differences from the old media route of true crime. So, Mackenzie, to go back to our initial question, how did My Favorite Murder help bring true crime from a private guilty pleasure of women to a public pastime?
Well, Cindy, I would summarize by saying that My Favorite Murder helped to push true crime into the limelight by encouraging a participatory culture based around true crime, creating a space for social interaction around a genre that used to be viewed as taboo, particularly for women, allowing fans, most of whom are women, to contribute to the media in a way that was not previously possible or even desired. People, you know, didn't think there was anything they could say about true crime. They just kind of watched it in their bedroom in secret and didn't talk about it. And My Favorite Murder has really changed that. All right, folks, that's been our episode of Media Nouveau. Thank you for listening. And importantly,
stay sexy
and don't get murdered. Bye. The music for this episode has been Cameo Appearance by Small Tall Order, found on the Free Music Archive. A big thanks to our line producer, Ray, and my assistant producer, Cindy Fang. I'm Mackenzie Lieberman, and be sure to listen to next week's episode of Media Nouveau.